struggling families. Then they begin hearing of the emotional cost, including the anguish of video conference funerals, such as for a family that had lost a husband, a mother, and an aunt in 1 month. They wondered if there would be interest in an alternative way to honor the dead. We sent out a social media post asking if anyone wanted to post a photograph of a relative who died of COVID. If we created a county memorial page, said county spokesperson Carlos Sanchez, who himself barely survived about with COVID in July.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to another program for a better life here on IRIB English Radio. We were talking about how to manage our lives. In the previous program, we talked about time management. In this program, I would like to speak more about financial management, which is also important. You might be surprised that Islam has talked about financial management. It has done so because it is a comprehensive way of life, and we have emphasized so many times in previous programs about this dimension of Islam, that Islam encompasses, embraces all the dimensions of human life, and one of them is to have financial management. It has done so because it is a comprehensive way of life. Islam expects its followers to plan their lives in such a way that they can live within their means and resources. For example, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam, this pious servant of Allah, said, from the signs of a believer are three things. What are they? Number one, good management of livelihood. Number two, patience in the face of calamity. You have patience when something that bothers you, something that is very difficult for you to handle. In that situation, in that difficult situation which you face, if you can endure, if you can have patience in the face of calamity, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will open up other doors for you. Number three, the study of religion. So whatever job you have, whatever occupation you have, whatever you are occupied with, you should always put time to study your deen, your religion. It does not matter if you are an architect. You are, first of all and foremost, a Muslim architect. It doesn't matter if you are an economist. Doesn't matter if you are a doctor. Doesn't matter if you are a wall maker, a shoemaker, whatever you are, whatever job you have, a time should be spent on knowing your religion, your deen. That is very, very important. The story of Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam in the 12th chapter of the Noble Quran clearly portrays that one has to plan and manage the resources wisely. the king of Egypt saw a dream in which seven fat cattle were devouring seven lean ones. And he saw seven green ears and seven dry ones. Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam interpreted the king's dream, informing him that there would be 7 years of good harvest followed by 7 years of severe drought, and that he should conserve the first 7 years harvest for the next 7 years drought. Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam was given the charge of the treasury of the land, and he wisely managed the distribution as well as the storing of the grains during the first 7 years. And consequently, the country did not suffer hunger, and they could even help other countries and other regions outside Egypt. The problem of waste, one of the biggest problems in financial management, dear brothers and sisters, is extravagance and waste, israf. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam said to one of his companions, "O Ubayd, extravagance or waste brings about poverty, whereas planning brings about affluence." There are two concepts in Islam, israf and tabdhir. Israf means wasting, extravagance, without being wasteful, overspending and living beyond one's means. Whereas tabdhir means wasting the blessings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Israf has been condemned in both religious as well as secular aspects of life.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
O children of Adam, attend to your embellishments at every rhyme of prayer, and eat and drink, but don't be extravagant. Surely Allah does not love the extravagant people. Chapter 7, verse 31. Kulu washrabu wa la tusrifu. Inna Allaha la yuhibbul musrifin. Those who waste the blessings that Allah has given to them are described as the brothers of the Satans, Shayateen. Chapter 17, verse 26 to 27. And this wasting should not only be applied to food items, it should be applied to your time management. You're not allowed to waste your life on TV programs and on something called the smartphone, the cell phone that you always have side by side with you, even when you go to your bed. Your cell phone should have a management. You should manage your time with your cell phone. Now, if you use your cell phone as a dictionary, that is all right. You're using your cell phone for research, that is all right. You're using your cell phone for different aspects that you need for your business, your job, whatever. That is all right. That is time management. But if you're wasting your time checking videos after videos, pictures after pictures, liking people, you know, putting those likes, those hearts, you know, those thumbs up in your Instagram or your Facebook or whatever app you have, that is wasting your time. And when you know it, you have spent more than 1 hour on that device or on those apps. That is not acceptable as a Muslim. You should have time management. You should control yourself when you're using those apps and those devices. Now, people sometimes criticize me for not checking my phone, not checking my WhatsApp and the other apps that I have. That is because I'm not linked to my phone all the time. I actually put time to other things, you know. You have families when they gather around the table when they want to eat, you know, you have them checking their phones, you know, going through their apps. That is unacceptable. Today, unfortunately, in our modern time, we have these issues where families are around one single table and they do not talk to each other. They're busy with their phones. Again, when you gather, when you have a family meeting, when you have a friend meeting, when you are going to friends, put those phones aside and just indulge yourself with a fruitful conversation with your friends and your families. Muslims should manage their lives within their resources, and this cannot be done unless they control their greed. Controlling greed becomes more challenging in this era of consumerism, when we are told to consume all the time, consume, buy more and more, purchase more and more products, and just consume and just waste and destroy our environment, because after all, we are getting everything from the planet Earth or Mother Earth. We are consuming our environment. We are destroying our environment when we consume and we buy and purchase things, devices that we do not need, or we just that we use them for a couple of times, or and then we put them aside in a corner of our house. That is not acceptable. We have to have management, financial management. Do we really need that device? Do we really need that tool? Do we really need that newest product in the market? Or don't we? Don't fall in the ditch of capitalism. Don't fall in the ditch of consumerism. You know, try to challenge yourself. Ask yourself when you enter a mall, a shopping center, ask yourself, do I really need this? Do I really need this? Or is it my nafs that is talking here? Is it my carnal soul that is talking here? So try to control yourself in this era of consumerism, where advertising and marketing tactics incite potential customers to buy an item as new and improved, even if the older model still fulfills their needs. You know, they always try to fool us that if you buy this product, you will be happier. You will have a joyful life. But that is not the case. That is far away from the truth. That's all for this program, dear brothers and sisters, here on For a Better Life on IRIB English Radio. Till next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
It's all I need.
All I need. It's all I need.
Love is all I need.
All I need.
Is all I need.
Oh, 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 oh.
Your love is all I need. To be all I
need.
And I know that you see how much you need.
I can't
be, and I know that you see.
solani.
In the limelight. Hello everyone and welcome to the programme. The article you're about to hear has been authored by Dennis Overby and carries the title, Can a Computer Devise a Theory of Everything? Might be possible, physicists say, but not anytime soon, and there's no guarantee that we humans will understand the result. Once upon a time, Albert Einstein described scientific theories as free inventions of the human mind. But in 1980, Stephen Hawking, the Cambridge University cosmologist, had another thought. In a lecture that year, he argued that the so-called theory of everything might be achievable, but that the final touches on it were likely to be done by computers. The theory of everything is still not in sight, but with computers taking over many of the chores in life, translating languages, recognizing faces, driving cars, it is not so crazy to imagine them taking over from the Hawkings and the Einsteins of the world. Computer programs keep discovering new ways to beat humans at games like chess, which have been studied and played for centuries. Why couldn't one of these marvelous learning machines let loose on an enormous astronomical catalogue or the petabytes of data, discern a set of new fundamental particles or discover a wormhole to another galaxy in the outer solar system? At least that's the dream. To think otherwise is to engage in what the physicist Max Tegmark calls carbon chauvinism. In November, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where Dr. Tegmark is a professor, cashed a check from the National Science Foundation and opened the metaphorical doors of the new Institute for Artificial Intelligence and Fundamental Interactions. The institute is one of seven set up as part of an effort to galvanize work in artificial intelligence. The MIT-based institute, directed by Jesse Thaler, a particle physicist, is the only one specifically devoted to physics. It includes more than two dozen scientists from all areas of physics, from MIT, Harvard, Northwestern University, and Tufts. What I'm hoping to do is to create a venue where researchers from a variety of different fields of physics, as well as researchers who work on computer science, machine learning, or artificial intelligence, can come together and have dialogue and teach each other things, Dr. Thaler said. Ultimately, I want to have machines that can think like a physicist. Their tool in this endeavor is a brand of artificial intelligence known as neural networks. Unlike so-called expert systems like IBM's Watson, which are loaded with human and scientific knowledge, neural networks are designed to learn as they go, similar to the way human brains do. By analyzing vast amounts of data for hidden patterns, they swiftly learn to distinguish dogs from cats, recognize faces, replicate human speech, flag financial misbehavior, and much more. We're hoping to discover all kinds of new laws of physics, Dr. Tegmark said. We have already shown that it can rediscover laws of physics. Last year, in what amounted to a sort of proof of principle, Dr. Tegmark and a student, Silviu Marian Udrescu, took 100 physics equations from a famous textbook and used them to generate data that was then fed to a neural network. The system sifted the data for patterns and regularities, and recovered all 100 formulas. Like a human scientist, it tries many different strategies, modules in turn. The researchers wrote in a paper published last year in Science Advances. And if it cannot solve the full problem in one fell swoop, it tries to transform it and divide it into simpler pieces that can be tackled separately, recursively relaunching the full algorithm on each piece. In another more challenging experiment, Dr. Tegmark and his colleagues showed the network a video of rockets flying around and asked it to predict what would happen from one frame to the next. Never mind the palm trees in the background, at the end the computer was able to discover the essential equations of motion, he said. Finding new particles at a place like CERN's Large Hadron Collider would be a cinch, Dr. Tegmark said. Artificial intelligence likes big data, and the collider data runs to thousands of terabytes a second. Never mind that a new particle hasn't appeared in the CERN data since the discovery of the Higgs boson in 2012, despite years of frenzied examinations of every bump in the data stream. Those are curves that humans look at, Dr. Tegmark said. In 10 years, machine learning will be an essential to doing physics as knowing mathematics. For now, he conceded, there are limits to what can be achieved by the algorithm's recursive methods of problem solving, a practice known as regression. Although the machine can retrieve from a pile of data the fundamental laws of physics, it cannot yet come up with the deep principles, like quantum uncertainty in quantum mechanics or relativity, that underlie those formulae. By the time that artificial intelligence comes back and tells you that then we have reached artificial general intelligence and you should be very scared or very excited, depending on your point of view, Dr. Tegmark said. The reason I'm working on this, honestly, is because what I find most menacing is if we build super powerful artificial intelligence computers and have no clue how it works, right? Dr. Thaler, who directs the new institute at MIT, said he was once a skeptic about artificial intelligence, but now was an evangelist. He realized that a physicist, he could encode some of his knowledge into the machine, which could then give answers that could interpret more easily. That becomes a dialogue between human and machine in a way that becomes more exciting, he said, rather than just having a black box you don't understand making decisions for you. He added, I don't particularly like calling these techniques artificial intelligence, since that language masks the fact that many artificial intelligence techniques have rigorous underpinnings in mathematics, statistics, and computer science. Yes, he noted, the machine can find very much better solutions than he can despite all of his training. But ultimately, I still get to decide what concrete goals are worth accomplishing, and I can aim at ever more ambitious targets, knowing that if I can rigorously define my goals in a language the computer understands, then artificial intelligence can deliver powerful solutions. Recently, Dr. Thaler and his colleagues fed their neural network a trove of data from the Large Hadron Collider, which smashes together protons in search of new particles and new forces. Protons, the building blocks of atomic matter, are themselves bags of smaller entities called quarks and gluons. When protons collide, these smaller particles squirt out in jets, along with whatever other exotic particles have coalesced out of the energy of the collision. To better understand this process, he and his team asked the system to distinguish between the quarks and the gluons in the collider data. We said, I'm not going to tell you something about quantum field theory. I'm not going to tell you what a quark or gluon is at a fundamental level, he said. I'm just going to say, here's a mess of data, please separate it into basically two categories. And it can do that. That is, the system successfully identified and distinguished between quarks and gluons, without ever knowing what either was. If you then ask the system if there is a third kind of object in that data, Dr. Thaler said, it starts to discover that quarks are not just one entity, but exist in different types, so-called up quarks and down quarks. And so it starts to, like, learn as you give it more flexibility to explore, he said. It doesn't know quantum field theory yet, but it knows to look for patterns. And that is a pattern that I was shocked that the machine would find. The work, he added, would help collider physicists untangle their results. Some physicists believe that the next great leap will come with the advent of artificial intelligence on quantum computers. Unlike classical computers, which manipulate bits of data that can be one or zero, the so-called qubits in quantum computers can be both at once. According to quantum physics, that is how elementary particles behave on the smaller scales of nature, and it allows quantum computers to process vast amounts of information simultaneously. Such machines are still in their infancy, but they hold great promise, said Seth Lloyd, a mechanical engineer and quantum computing expert at MIT, who is not part of this new Artificial Intelligence Institute. The basic insight is that quantum systems can generate patterns that are hard for classical systems to generate, Dr. Seth Lloyd said. So maybe quantum systems can also recognize patterns that classical systems recognize. Maria Spiropoulou, a physicist at the California Institute of Technology, pointed to the growing literature on quantum artificial intelligence and quantum-inspired algorithms that solve problems that we thought of as unsolvable previously. How far this could go depends on whom you ask. Could a machine produce the abstrusive and unintuitive principles of quantum theory? Or Einstein's bulwark principles of relativity? Could it produce a theory that we humans can't understand? Steven Weinberg, a professor of physics at the University of Texas at Austin, called it a troubling thought that humans might not be smart enough to understand the final theory of everything. But Steven Weinberg said, I suspect in that case, we will also not be smart enough to design a computer that can find a final theory of everything. Lisa Randall, a physicist at Harvard University, wrote, I can readily imagine computers finding equations or relationships we don't know how to interpret, but that is not really different from the many measurements we cannot yet explain. Edward Witten, from the Institute of Advanced Study at Princeton University, noted that although a theory of everything machine didn't exist yet, it might in the next century. If there were a machine that appeared to be interested in and curious about physics, I would certainly be interested in conversing with it.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, The Wise and the Fool. The wise are positive and truth-seeking individuals, so they always look for their high objectives in the external existence. And since attainment of them is not possible without endeavor and attempt, they focus their effort on their action. The foolish and unaware, on the other hand, are drowned in a sea of wishes and imaginations and seek for what they have lost in the world of imaginations. And since access to fancies does not require work and effort, negative tendencies are manifested in all aspects of their life. They live on their dreams, content with waiting for subjective victories in a tomorrow that never comes. This is how we look at those who are wise and those who are fools. The wise people know the reality of this world. They know that this world is real. They're living here. They've been sent here by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with a program, with an agenda. They're not like wild beasts, you know, roaming around not knowing what they're doing with their lives. When it comes to those wise men, their targets and goals are defined, and they work towards those goals in a very organized manner. But when it comes to the fools think that this world is a place where they got sent without their choice, and they have no agenda. They try to figure out on the fly what they are going to be doing with their lives. Hence, you see and notice that their goals are not defined, their lives are not organized. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing how Islam defines a wise and how Islam defines a foolish person. Now, a wise person knows that there is a purpose to his life. A foolish person, on the other hand, has no clue what his life is all about. Imam Ali alayhi salam has given us a definition of wise man and a foolish man. The Imam says, the wise man relies on his endeavor and action, and the fool relies on his wishes. See, if you meet people who have a long and exhaustive wish list, and you don't see any practical actions that they're taking towards accomplishing that wish list, you should know that this person is a fool in the light of this tradition of Imam Ali alayhi salam. People who are after their whims and wishes, and we're not even talking about whether these wishes are good or bad. We're not saying that they're divine or non-divine wishes. We're not saying that these are their personal materialistic desires or something heavenly and something divine in nature. That's not the topic here. The topic here is if somebody has a list of wishes and they're not working to accomplish that, they're not struggling to accomplish that, this person is no one but a fool. He lives in a fool's paradise. But somebody who has a list of things that he needs to do and takes it as a responsibility and takes it up as an endeavor and acts on, you know, different programs to accomplish that wish list, then this person can be defined as a wise person. Again, you know, how wise he is a separate topic. If he is working on the agenda given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he is truly wise in the right sense of the word. But nevertheless, the bottom line is, action and struggle and endeavor is what makes someone wise. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Donald Trump looks set to become the first American president to be impeached for a second time as Democrats accuse him of fomenting a coup at the U.S. Capitol building that left at least five people dead. The historic effort gained momentum on Friday, 8th of January, after it emerged that a police officer was among those killed when a pro-Trump mob stormed the seat of American democracy in Washington, after the president encouraged supporters to fight like hell to overturn the result of November's election. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist David Smith. The piece is titled, "Effort to Impeach Trump Again Gathers Pace After Attempted Coup at Capitol." Stay with us for more of David Smith's article. Donald Trump looks set to become the first American president to be impeached for a second time as Democrats accused him of fomenting a coup at the U.S. Capitol building in Washington that left at least five people dead. The historic effort gained momentum on Friday, 8th of January, after it emerged that a police officer was among those killed when a pro-Trump mob stormed the seat of American democracy in Washington after the president encouraged his supporters to fight like hell to overturn the result of last November's election. In a letter to members of the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker, called Trump's actions a horrific assault on our democracy and called on the President to resign or face impeachment proceedings yet again. Today, following the President's dangerous and seditious acts, Republicans in Congress need to follow that example and call on Trump to depart his office immediately, she wrote. If the president does not leave the office immediately and willingly, the Congress will proceed with our action. The president belatedly denounced the insurrection in a video on Thursday, 7th of January, but followed up with a tweet on Friday, 8th of January, that praised his supporters as patriots before announcing that he will not attend his successor Joe Biden's inauguration on 20th of January. Democrats in the House, where they hold a majority, said they intend to speed ahead with Donald Trump's impeachment next week. The Senate would then hold a trial and vote on his removal from office with a two-thirds majority required for conviction of Donald Trump.
To
Republican Senator Ben Sasse said on Friday he would definitely consider any articles of impeachment from the House, telling CBS News Trump had disregarded his oath of office and that his incitement of violence was wicked. Lisa Murkowski of Atlanta, Georgia, told the Anchorage Daily News, I want him to resign. I want him out. He has caused enough damage. The first Republican senator to call for Donald Trump to go, Lisa Murkowski also said, if the Republican Party has become nothing more than the party of Donald Trump, I sincerely question whether this is the party for me. Later on Friday afternoon, a White House statement said, this is a time for healing and unity as one nation. A politically motivated impeachment against the president with 12 days remaining in his term will only serve to further divide our country. In a speech on Wednesday, 6th of January, Donald Trump exhorted a crowd of thousands to descend on the Capitol building to protest his election defeat. Rioters overwhelmed police officers and stormed the building, rampaging through its ornate halls, looting officers and posing for photographs in the Senate chamber. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, a 40-year-old, died from injuries sustained in the invasion, according to Washington police. A woman was fatally shot by the authorities and three people died from medical emergencies. Pipe bombs were found at the headquarters of the Democratic and Republican parties. Washington police made 68 arrests. In the immediate aftermath of the breach, which interrupted a session of Congress held to ratify Joe Biden's election win, Donald Trump declined to issue condemnation, instead telling his supporters he loved them and repeating his baseless assertion that he was being cheated out of victory. Nancy Pelosi and the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer called for immediate impeachment proceedings if Vice President Mike Pence and the Cabinet refused to invoke the 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which allows them to strip the President of his powers if he cannot discharge the duties of his office. The President's dangerous and seditious act necessitates his immediate removal from office, they said in a statement on Thursday evening, accusing Donald Trump of inciting an insurrection. Message to Democratic colleagues on Friday, Nancy Pelosi wrote that Republicans should emulate their predecessors who nearly 50 years ago persuaded President Richard Nixon to resign after the Watergate scandal. Pelosi also revealed that she had spoken to General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to discuss available precautions for preventing an unstable president from initiating military hostilities or accessing the launch codes and ordering a nuclear strike. She added, the situation of this unhinged president could not be more dangerous, and we must do everything that we can to protect the American people from his unbalanced assault on our country and on our democracy. Catherine Clark, the assistant speaker of the House of Representatives, told CNN, Democrats were prepared to move forward with impeachment as early as next week. And James Clyburn, the number three House Democrat, told CNN, everyone knows that this president is deranged. Can confirm that we have had discussions about it, and I would hope that the speaker would move forward if the Vice President Mike Pence refuses to do what he's required to do under the Constitution. The House impeached Donald Trump in December of 2019 for pressuring the Ukrainian president to investigate his political rival Joe Biden and his son. But the U.S. Senate acquitted him in February of last year. Only two other presidents have been impeached. None has been impeached twice. There are signs the incident has shaken Donald Trump's grip on the Republican Party as never before, with Congressman Adam Kinzinger Also, among those calling for his removal, several senior administration officials have resigned, including two members of Donald Trump's cabinet. They are Elaine Chao, the Transportation Secretary, and Betsy DeVos, the Education Secretary. In a statement, Elaine Chao, the Transportation Secretary, who's married to the Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, said the violent attack on the Capitol building deeply troubled me in a way that I simply cannot set aside. Betsy DeVos, the Education Secretary, cast blame on the president for inciting the mob. There is no mistaking the impact of your rhetoric had on the situation, and it is the inflection point for me, Betsy DeVos wrote. Even Rupert Murdoch's conservative Wall Street Journal has finally turned on Donald Trump and called for his resignation to avoid a second impeachment. It would give Mr. Trump agency, a la Richard Nixon, over his own fate, it wrote in an editorial. But conviction in the Senate remains unlikely, with some warning that it would further inflame America's divisions. Senator Lindsey Graham, a Trump loyalist, tweeted that it is time to heal and move on. If Speaker Nancy Pelosi pushes impeachment in the last days of Donald Trump's presidency, it will do more harm than good, he wrote. Lindsey Graham wrote, I'm hopeful President-elect Joe Biden sees the damage that would be done from such action. In a video released on Thursday evening, 7th of January, Donald Trump promised a smooth and ordinary transition of power, though he stopped short of abandoning his claims of election fraud. And on Friday, he followed up with a tweet that showed little sign of repentance. The 75 million great American patriots who voted for me, America First and Make America Great Again, will have a giant voice long into the future, Donald Trump posted. They will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape or form. The president added a fitting coda to his norm-shattering presidency. He wrote, to all those who have asked, I will not be going to the inauguration on 20th of January. Vice President Mike Pence is expected to attend the inauguration, an event that will feature heightened security in smaller crowds because of the coronavirus pandemic.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Around the world with reporters.
Outgoing US President Donald Trump has finally declared there will be an orderly transition of power. The news comes after violence in the nation's capital as Trump supporters stormed the Capitol building while lawmakers met to certify President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. World leaders joined the chorus of outrage condemning the outgoing president for stoking the unrest. For weeks he undermined the result, claiming election fraud, and then rallied protesters to head to the Capitol. As angry demonstrators stormed Congress, one woman was shot dead by police and three others died of, quote, medical emergencies. An improvised explosive device was also intercepted by authorities. As the situation deteriorated, fellow Republicans urged Trump to call his protest off. Hours later, he posted a video reiterating his claims of fraud. He also cheered his supporters, saying he loved them and described them as special, but called on them to remain calm and return home. In an unprecedented step, Twitter took down the video and suspended his account, threatening permanent suspension if he continued to violate the social media platform. President of the European Council, Charles Michel, took to Twitter to voice his concerns. He joined world leaders calling for a peaceful transfer of power. Earlier, UK Home Secretary Priti Patel was asked about Trump's role in stoking anger and mistrust in the electoral process.
We've just seen, you know, confidence in democracy being shattered, quite frankly, and there's no justification for the level of violence, full stop, that was on show and has been on display, and people have been assaulted, people have died. The violence, you know, should stop, and he should absolutely condemn everything that has taken place.
In the early hours, Republican Senator Mitt Romney blamed President Trump for inciting a violent insurrection. He also downplayed suggestions of a congressional audit to placate angry Trump supporters.
For any who remain insistent on an audit in order to satisfy the many people who believe that the election was stolen, I'd offer this perspective. No congressional audit is ever going to convince these voters, particularly when the president will continue to say that the election was stolen.
Many predicted unrest, but Wednesday's scenes went beyond expectation. Four people dead, with lawmakers having to cower and abandon the historic building. In less than 2 weeks, President-elect Joe Biden will be inaugurated in the very same building. But with scenes of unrest, authorities will be bracing for more potential chaos, as the world watches the most powerful nation descend into even greater levels of division.
Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, a name that defined Iran's nuclear energy program. The top Iranian nuclear scientist was assassinated in November last year. In terms of who was behind the incident, Iran has from the outset pointed the finger at Israel. Israel has a track record of killing Iranian nuclear scientists since 2010. Fakhrizadeh is the fifth to be targeted. While Iran has revealed that it has tracked down some of those involved in the attack, families of the slain nuclear scientists have separately initiated a lawsuit at Iran's Court for International Affairs, not against Israel, but against the United States, for, quote, systemic support for Israel's terrorist activities against Iran. The lead lawyer of the lawsuit says if the case is certified, Iran can freeze American assets in some countries and transfer them as compensation to the families of the victims.
The families of the slain scientists demand that the masterminds of the attacks be punished. Iran does not recognize Israel as a country, so we filed a lawsuit against the U.S. as the major supporter of Israel's crimes. The case will be reviewed at Iran's Court for International Affairs, and then we will take further legal proceedings at an international scale. This is to relieve part of the pain inflicted on the families of the victims.
Iran says the assassination of its scientists pursues a single goal: to deal a heavy blow to the country's nuclear program. But the emotional side effects are even heavier to bear for the families of the victims. Like 14-year-old Armita, who lost her father when she was only four. She says she will never forgive those who took away her dream. Israel has not commented on any of the assassinations of the Iranian scientists. But as to the last one, it has already spilled the beans on itself. Fakhrizadeh had long been on Israel's hit list. This remark by the Israeli Prime Minister perhaps says it all.
This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Abad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
But this time around, Iran was quick to respond. Days ago, the country resumed enriching uranium to 20% purity, surpassing the 3.67% cap set by the 2015 nuclear deal.
While Tehran interprets the elimination of its nuclear scientists as nothing but an attempt to derail its nuclear program, the hunt for those culpable in Fakhrizadeh assassination is placing the remaining pieces of the puzzle, which observers say is giving stronger clues of an Israeli link to the issue. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
An official ceremony was held at the Assad House for Art and Culture in Damascus, marking the first martyrdom anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Iran's ambassador to Syria delivered a word condemning the assassination crime and asserting that the Iranian people have taken revenge and continue to do so. He also reiterated his country's ongoing support to the Syrian people and army until the full defeat of terror.
The criminal act perpetrated by the U.S. administration is against all international laws and the U.N. Charter. It is an act rejected by the entire world. The assassination proves the failure of the aggressive plot aimed at supporting terrorism and spreading instability in this region.
The event was attended by a wide range of high-ranking officials. Dr. Boutaina Shaban, who was representing Syria's President Bashar al-Assad in the ceremony, said the U.S. assassinated General Soleimani out of fear of his successful strategy that undermined their plots in the region, stressing Syrians will learn many lessons from the general's life. On the sideline of the ceremony, an exhibition was held shedding light on General Soleimani's life and focusing on his achievements in the fight against terror in Syria and Iraq in the past decade. A year after Lieutenant General Soleimani's assassination, Syrians are clearly keen to demonstrate their respect to his sacrifices for their country. Ceremonies held across the country express the high level of appreciation everyone here has for what the general had offered for the security of Syrian territories. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Following the landslide victory of Venezuela's ruling Socialist Party in last December's legislative election, former Information Minister Jorge Rodriguez has now been appointed as the new Speaker of the Nation's Congress, also known as National Assembly. Rodriguez, who is widely regarded as one of President Nicolas Maduro's closest allies, has claimed that the newly elected Congress will work exhaustively to promote the policies of the country's president. The assumption of Rodriguez as head of parliament puts an end to a five-year-long control of the congressional body by the opposition, through which the spat between the executive and the legislative produced political turmoil in the Latin American Republic. Socialist lawmakers praised the designation of Rodriguez, although in the opposition some complain about the new head of parliament. Nonetheless, experts believe that the new parliament is a politically balanced body now. Now that Venezuela's ruling Socialist Party has regained control of the country's Congress, many believe that President Maduro is more stable than ever in his office, while the opposition has hit bottom in political terms. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
Unemployment rates among Turkish youth have increased dramatically in the recent period, especially after the outbreak of the new coronavirus pandemic. According to the latest figures released by the Turkish Statistical Institute, the unemployment rate was 12.7% in September 2020. Turkish government says reviving economy is among its priorities amid the pandemic. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has vowed not to allow foreign factors negatively affect the country's economy.
It is not possible for a state to survive in long term with rising unemployment. So we have developed various plans to revive our economy, turning it into one of the 10 largest economies in the world by equal distribution of wealth among our population.
As part of efforts to stop declining employment, the government has banned companies from firing employees during the pandemic. So it prevents us from seeing the direct effect of the coronavirus on unemployment. We cannot see it in numbers, but we can definitely see it on the ground. This is how economists explain.
Unemployment is one of the biggest economic problems in the world, and Turkey is no exception. Despite our government's projects to lower the unemployment rates, unfortunately the numbers are rising, especially amid the pandemic that has paralyzed the economic sector.
The government says it plans to lower the unemployment rate to 10.9% in 2023. However, it seems that it all depends on how the country plans to recover from a pandemic and the lira crisis. As observed,